will be put together with a relatively small group of people. And I think that's part of the, that's always been part of my perception of Hudson, of its challenge, is getting more good people involved in more projects.
Right. Certainly the loss of Sheena Salvino, who was the director earlier this year when
as
she moved away,
was a
big loss in terms of the operations of it. Just she provided a great deal of expertise.
Right, she did. Yeah. And when you have someone who's been in a position as long as she was, 7 years, and who was as competent as she was and has made the kind of contributions she did, yeah, it's a big loss. And it came at a time when the CAS project was challenged. And so we're sort of standing back and looking at the landscape and saying, okay, now how do we approach our job now with all these factors, with a town that is really has its attention is drawn in many different directions, and how to refocus and repurpose this particular agency.
Right. One of the consistent critiques of HDC is that there was sort of a veil of secrecy that surrounded it. It was sort of inscrutable. A lot of people thought that meeting at noon was inappropriate because more people could attend at 6. Setting that aside for a moment, there was still a lot of use of executive sessions in the past. Is that something that you feel was legitimate at the time, or is it something that you feel probably should be addressed?
Let's see. You've got a couple of questions there. One is the issue of sort of the veil of secrecy. That I attribute solely to the fact that not enough people were paying attention. I think I think also, I mean, we under better circumstances, we would have been doing a better job of communicating what we were doing. But it's not as if the meetings were closed. I really think that the challenge that there's too many executive sessions. There was a handful, and we are a real estate organization. I mean, that's and real estate is one of the prime issues for use of an executive session. But even then, we didn't use it that much.
Right. And just to be clear to listeners, executive session is used when you have to talk about financial transactions third parties, or pay issues with
employees, employee issues, but also is the other big one,
right?
Or public safety.
Okay.
Yeah. Those discussions can be held according to the Committee on Open Government in executive session. Now you always need to be careful about exercising that, and I think that one needs to be any organization needs to be very careful about it. I think that we made a judgment and error in not accepting the fact that we were subject to the open meetings law. But it wasn't, it was something we worked through. And I think that even when we did not actually consider that we were subject to it, meetings were always open. There were never, the meetings were not closed. So I think it's, again, I think that it came down largely to some mistaken ideas about what was actually going on. That the organization somehow wasn't productive, when indeed the organization was largely responsible for developing a DRI in partnership with the Columbia Economic Development Committee, which is an enormous contribution. So it doesn't, I would never say that an organization like this is not without error.
Right.
And we've had a number of discussions. I believe that we were, in terms of the open meetings, that we really should have been working within, acknowledging the fact that this organization should be operating under the Committee for Open Government, and that's fine with me.
However, the interpretation goes, you'd rather just voluntarily act as a more open and transparent organization.
Well, it isn't. We had these discussions on the board about whether or not HDC's board was or was not an organization that was covered by the Committee on Open Government rules for governmentally funded organizations. That's basically the understanding. And We received very little government funding, but we did receive some, and we had these discussions back and forth, and some of us felt that it was that we should be covered, and others didn't. We had legal advice to that end. So, but I think that I hope that that one is not. Let me put it this way: I don't think that that issue, and I think this very firmly, was not. The reason and a good excuse for in effect suggesting the dissolution of a development corporation.
And there was that suggestion by Tom DiPietro, who's Common Council President mm-hmm. in Hudson. The mayor came to the other side. He said, no, you know, HDC has this institutional memory mm-hmm. and it has this freedom. Do you feel like, you know, you've lost Sheena? Is there that, does that institutional memory hold up? I mean, do you have enough people with expertise in the required areas to still provide that guidance to Hudson? And as a second part to mm-hmm. that question, you know, when we talk about institutional memory, we are also talking about some freedom from the political process, which has its, you know, obviously benefits. You know, you don't have to worry about being reelected in 2 years. You can kind of sit down and focus on some longer term projects. Do you feel like that justifies the existence of HDC?
It's one of the justifications, certainly. I think it will, let's see, try to take your questions one at a time. The first question about institutional memory. It's institutional memory is one of the reasons why I have stayed on this board, because I've been on it probably at this point as long as anyone has. Seth Rapport, who was off and on, who's a well-respected financial broker in town, and I actually were the two people who made a transition from to sort of we considered the new HDC. We Seth created the ability the tactic that properties in town could be donated so that we would have properties to develop. The Riverlofts building on so-called Riverlofts building on Front Street that is now owned by Kite's Nest and the Kaz building were both donated, and for tax deduction, it's a smart, fairly standard way to put properties into the hands of a development organization that is part of the city. And I think that you know, I know that Hudson Development Corporation has been around since about 1976, and it was part of the urban renewal. It was there was a lot of slush money around during the time when urban renewal was in force, and HCDPA, the Hudson Community Development Planning Agency, was really the senior agency because it was the recipient of all these urban renewal funds. HDC was set up to do some independent development that only an independent nonprofit could do.
And am I incorrect in this? You can stop me. But HCDPA was created specifically to address housing issues in the city of Hudson. HDC, as a local development corporation, are more focused, mm-hmm. or they are supposed to be more focused on workforce development and employment issues generally.
Well, employment, I don't want to suggest that employment is not important. It really is. It's one of the two sort of most important aspects of what a local development corporation can do. But you have to also have the businesses or the nonprofits or the schools that, you know, indeed can provide that employment. And that takes some intelligent maneuvering strategic attracting of people, places. I mean, we think about this as businesses. I mean, that's not necessarily the only example. For example, Bard College. For the time that I've been in Hudson, we have had these conversations going about if the prison were ever to close, what would be the appropriate entity to take that over? And as far as I'm concerned, a college of that stature that would be present in this city would be an enormous advantage, both in terms of employment, in terms of the coursework that students can take. We talk a lot about the development of a digitally competent workforce. Well, that's one way that you get it. is by having a university or a college within your community. Now, we have the Columbia Green, but a four-year institution would also be extremely, beneficial. That's not a business. That's not a manufacturing business. It's not a clothing store. It's not a restaurant. But that's the sort of thing you need to think about. That's the sort of entity you need to think about when you're thinking about economic development.
One of the things that when I lived in San Francisco, my company would pay for us to take college classes. And so I just went to UC Berkeley Extension and Stanford Extension and took night classes because it was great and provided a well-rounded education and made me a better employee and, more competitive in the workplace.
Right.
That doesn't really, Columbia Green does provide a lot of very valuable training, but I think in terms of the digital economy, that is an area where they're certainly not focused, and that is an area our workforce could use some development.
Yeah, I'm very much aware of the profile of Columbia Green, and I know what they're up against in terms of the other community colleges, Dutchess County, Hudson Valley, and how they have to fend for themselves within this other community. And yes, I would be delighted if they were Hudson Valley Community College and had that breadth. But that's not really possible for them. So I think that, I know that, that they're, I consider them a valuable asset, but I do consider that another asset that was a four-year, that is, in my experience, one of the considerable building blocks for economic development of any community is to have a full-fledged college next door. And that's, Bard is almost next door. But it's still 20 minutes.
They flood Hudson every summer with their right. with their new graduates,
right?
Who take all the jobs waiting tables.
Now you asked another question about the 2-year, 4-year, the 2-year issue and LDC.
Yes,
it is. There are always projects. I mean, there are projects. For example, like the development of the North Bay into a recreation conservation area, that's a project that's been ongoing in development largely through the efforts of the Columbia Land Conservancy for 10 years. You don't develop that in two year blocks. You don't develop a project for HDC like something around the CAS warehouse property in 2 years.
Right.
It just isn't. It isn't viable like that.
I want to talk about the CAS development for just a second.
Sure.
So the CAS redevelopment has had an interesting history. HDC got as far as putting a request for proposal out to a number of developers. There were 3 developers who responded.
Correct.
The process was kind of halted, and you guys are sort of at this point of inflection now. I think that Matthew Frederick, who is an urban design professional living in Hudson, had pointed out that, rather than just going to one developer, it might be good to democratize the process by cutting the area into parcels and creating a grid. He'd like to see an urban design study. How does that influence your thinking about what needs to be done with CAS? Are we limited there?
No, I don't think we're limited. I have a lot of respect for what Matt is talking about, and I think we're particularly fortunate that we have Walter Chatham on the board now. And Walter is an exponent of something very similar called Smart Code, and as sort of smart development, smart cities. It's very similar to what Matt is talking about, and I think that it's a way of looking at the both the culture of an area and the available property and what could or couldn't be done there. Now, I am not sufficiently versed, and I will admit that freely, to say whether or not what Matt is saying is economically feasible. I think that, in concept, I like the idea of having that sort of cityscape development down there but I don't know how feasible it is, and I'm sort of cautiously reserved about that, because one of the other aspects of economic development that I haven't mentioned already is really providing housing and providing an economic and providing a tax base improvement. This is a very highly taxed city, and we've also talked very much about needing market rate housing, mm-hmm. both affordable and market rate housing. And I think that both of those issues were what we were trying to get at when we put this RFP together. And I think they're both still laudable goals for the city. And I think that I think that standing back now and taking another look at what's down there and having a number of community fora where we actually see what people think could happen down there. There are certain aspects of what Matt is talking about which I really respect, which is, I mean, if you could have 80 to 90 units of housing down there, which is roughly what we were talking about, and do it in the way Matt was talking about, I think it would be wonderful because it really would, you know, reflect it would look like natural and authentic growth from the city down to that property.
Which also, you know, if you have a lot of local owners, provides more money staying in the local economy rather than going out to a developer who's probably not located in Hudson.
Well, I know, and there's the other issue that I think will bedevil us until we get a really good handle on it is sea level rise and climate change down there, insofar as we got into the conversations with the three developers. They had some sense that they really needed to deal with that in terms of the elevation of the buildings or how they sequestered power plants so that a flood would not disable that community. Those in concept were good ideas. I mean, because something needs to be done down there. I mean, how do you develop individual parcels down there and then have them also be resilient in terms of flooding and sea level rise?
I mean, ostensibly a large developer, could put in an underground parking structure that could take in a lot of that floodwater. If they happen, individual homeowners are probably not going to have that expertise.
Yeah. So, and it's not as if that isn't a question that can't be answered.
Right.
But it is a question, and there are layers of these questions that we need to try to address. And so standing back, you know, we've added three or four or five really good new board members. And I think all of us want to, you know, say, okay, it's tabula rasa. Where do we go now?
Right. And I would like to talk a little bit about those new board members. Mm-hmm. Two of them in particular, you have Greg Carey, mm-hmm. Who is from Singularity University.
Yeah.
I believe that is an online mm-hmm. university. So a little bit of expertise in workforce development. And Mark Morgan Perez, who's been working in affordable housing.
Most of his professional
career.
Right.
Those are great additions to the board. You know, mm-hmm. is that something that you're looking to do more of? Are you going to pivot to more workforce development initiatives? There was a mm-hmm. comment, one of the last HDC meetings, that, hey, you know, none of us are real estate professionals. None of us know how to develop this. Maybe it would be better if we sold a parcel, turned it over to a developer, and focus more on things that would benefit the community that are sort of in our wheelhouse.
As I said at the time, I'm perfectly happy to talk about that. I don't see that as being it's not what I would consider the responsible position in terms of stewardship of our resources in the city's best interest. Because I think that the, you know, the workforce development is really, again, about having resources, either money or jobs available. And I mean, workforce development, as far as I'm concerned, in those circumstances, is workforce development outside the city of Hudson, which I'm actually okay with. I mean, I was delighted to see when the Kaz warehouse turned into Flanders and then turned into the Japanese-owned filter company, because right outside the city limits are, you know, what, 100 jobs that they have there? I mean, it's an enormous, you know. So I'm not suggesting that the only jobs that we should be creating have to be in the city. But I think it's going to be difficult to create additional, you know, economic resources, primarily tax base, and business development and think only of workforce development. You have to think of what we could put in here. What, I mean, Harney's is here. What else can we do in the city where, you know, where we could actually develop some resources where people would be employed in reasonably good jobs?
Don, final question is that, mm-hmm. you know, Hudson right now is a city, you're right, with a lot of stuff fomenting. There's a lot of economic activity here. Mm-hmm. Interest rates are rising on the federal level. We have a lot of second homes and investment properties. You know, if we pull into a recession, might be a deep recession, does that change HDC's mandate? I mean, we could be looking at a very different city in 2 years.
Oh, does it change its mandate?
Or does it sorry, I, does know, it change the way that HDC goes about its business?
Well, I think that's the city is going to have to tell that to us, because I think that I was, you know, the Registrar had an article today about the extent of Airbnb involvement in the county, 34,000 rentals in a
study provided by Airbnb.
Airbnb,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Well, actually, it was, and it regardless. If there's a really bad recession, this gets into the whole issue of tourism, which I think we do really well by, but it is, I worry about it because I don't want it to be the only game in town, and I think right. that, insofar as being a consistent economic development organization, we need to be looking at things other than tourism. Because the tourism economy is really fairly, it's very robust.
Though it is seasonal, I would point out. You know, Hudson yeah. Valley in the summer is a very different place than Hudson in the winter.
Right.
And Hudson midweek is very different Absolutely. Than the Hudson on the weekend. And as somebody who works in hospitality, I can tell you, there's two totally different situations going on depending on your day of the week, your time of the day, or your month of the year.
Or the month of the year, right. Yeah, yeah exactly.
All right, Don Moore,
yep.
Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm delighted you asked me. Thank you.
You're listening to WGXC.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeple. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio, WGXC.
Turn out, tune in, and ring in the new year, New Year's Eve, with WGXC live at the Half Moon in Hudson for WGXC's annual New Year's Eve event, live broadcast, and a fun night at Half Moon in Hudson. The evening gets started with karaoke with Amanda Lees, followed by dancing to the sounds of the band Blueberry. You can go to blueberrylounge.com for information about them. And then DJ Var from WGXC's Friday Night Vibe session takes over after hours. Your contribution at the door keeps community radio on the air in your area on 90.7 FM. There's food from the Taste of India food truck outside. Tune in, turn out, and ring in the new year at Half Moon in Hudson starting at 8 p.m. Monday, December 31st into Tuesday, January 1st, New Year's Eve, with WGXC on the air and at the Half Moon in Hudson.
Oh, this is always a good time. You know, this always is the time to stop and remind you that if you're listening and you like us and you support the station in general, why don't you become a sustaining listener supporter? It's not hard. You go to the website, wgxc.org or .org, and there's a slash, and then it says donate. And you go there, and what you find is the way to become a sustaining supporter. And what that means is every month, GXC, the kind folks here at GXC, will alert you to the fact that you are money is being taken from your credit card. Not a lot. Whatever you ask, whatever you say you were willing to give, be it $5, be it $100. It's there. They let you know, and you then you don't even have to worry about it. They'll ask you if you want to give that month, and you do, and you don't even know it's gone. You know, it's like it's so much harder. If I had $5 in my pocket and someone said, "Please give me that for the WGXC," I'd say, "Hey, I need it for my coffee, my whatever." But if you're never even saw it and it's online and it's your credit card, you don't even think about it. Thank you.